tosses up. Van Vliet, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three. No, that's it. Good.
She got it.
Kansas Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
It may be opening day, but we're in mid-season form, maybe just a little bit. This is the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. I'm Leo Stoddard, your sports director here and master of ceremonies on the Red Zone. And once again, we're back in triple threat formation.
Sir.
Thanks.
Joe?
Sorry, I was trying to say that to myself.
Yeah. Getting things back on track here, we have our regular co-host, Mr. Joey Dwyer, WZND's production director and the voice of the Quad City Storm.
I'm sorry, Leo, I'm still trying to recover from that. Yes, sir.
And the voice of the ominous yes, sir, is our producer, Mr. Joe Kennedy of TV 10 News of the Naperville Trolley Company. Mm-hmm. And we're back here. It's opening
day.
We're back. It's one of the best days of the sporting calendar year. We have the Masters going on. We have opening day.
Yeah.
Spring is finally here, even if it doesn't really feel like it outside.
I know. Like, I was watching the Masters today and, like, looking down in the Georgia, I was like, I would do anything to see that right now. I mean, it's brutal. And also opening day, both colliding on the same day. I mean, I don't know if that's happened before, so.
No, it's a beautiful day in sports. And we got a lot of good Redbird sports going on, too.
Yeah, we do.
Sure do. That's a great tease there, Joey, because it was a huge week for Illinois State baseball. Baseball and softball, both teams on the diamond. While the pros might just be starting their season, the birds have been in action for quite some time. For the baseball team, Wednesday and Tuesday were two pretty significant W's.
Yeah.
The first one taking down the University of Illinois, sending them back to Champaign with a 10-1 loss, and then really taking care of business yesterday against Western Illinois, 15-7. But I think the Illinois game is where we should start things off here, because they've picked up their third Power 5 win of the season, but this one felt like the signature one, because against Arkansas, against Purdue, those were games where you won by a couple of runs and then kind of got beat by them next time around. But this one, they really took it to Illinois, beating them 10-1. This one felt like it was never in doubt.
And they did it like in all facets of the game. They did it on defense, some great defensive plays, Cermak out in center, Guile at third base, and Chang over as well, and their pitching was doing good. Wyman had a great outing, going five innings in his first start in the year, I believe, and that's a role he's really not put into a lot, but they needed a guy to go five innings. I remember Scott Beaton was telling us before the game, he's like, we just want him to get five, and he did exactly that. No runs given up against Illinois, but the Illini did really struggle with runners in scoring position. They were batting, I believe, like 180, 160 with runners on, so they kind of struggled in that point, but the Birds pitching staff was terrific in that Illini game.
Yeah, and Wyman is definitely not a guy you think of when you think of the good pitchers on this Illinois State rotation, or like the top echelon guys, but he really came out and proved a lot against the Illini.
Well, talking to Steve Holm pregame, he was talking about how Colin Wyman is kind of his guy. He knows he can use in all different situations. This was his second start of the year. They've used him in save situations, and they've used him in a long relief role as well. So he knows he can use him in a lot of different roles, which speaks about his versatility of a pitcher. And that's something good to have in your back pocket, somebody that could go be your midweek starter, because in the way the pitching rotation is going to be deployed, you're going to use your guys Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But then for all these midweek games, you're going to use someone that's not in the rotation. So knowing that Wyman can take care of that, and he hasn't had too many reps as a starting pitcher, partly because they've had so many rainouts midweek. So I think the plan was to have him get more starts, and he really hasn't had that many opportunities this year, but he really took advantage of that one. And I think looking at how he pitched with runners on base was huge, too, because he got in a couple of jams. There was a situation with bases loaded, a couple of two men on, but he was just doing a good job of focusing on the batter at the plate and was really letting his defense take care of business behind him, too.
Yeah, and the defense, you're touching on that, Leo, and also the pitches he was throwing, it didn't seem like a lot of hard contact the Illini were getting. I mean, a lot of balls were going towards right field anyway. The wind was blowing a lot out there in that direction. But a lot of the Illini batters were just kind of either pulling it or pushing it out to the right, it seemed like, with the pitches that Wyman was trying to put in there. And they did good, and their pitching with the bullpen came out, and they were strong as well. I mean, Kubitowicz came in, did a very good job against the Illini. He pitched for, I believe, yeah, two innings, giving up just three hits. Did give up the one run, but it was a fluke run, Leo. It was a grounder going to the first base, and it literally just hit the bag and over the head, and it was mostly just a 10-0 game. That was just a one fluke run.
The player that maybe impressed me the most was Caden Beauregard, third string catcher going in this. The first two, Woltman and Flores, were a little banged up, and so he was still in search of his first collegiate hit, and he reached base three times. I think he reached on an error, he had a hit by pitch, and then finally got that big RBI base hit that really broke the game open.
But also his defense. He had some great stops behind the plate. A lot of balls were being put in the dirt, like towards the fifth and sixth inning in that time, and then he had a great throwdown in the second inning. Illini runner was trying to advance the second, and he was able to force him out. I mean, that's a big play. That game at the time was tied 0-0, and maybe if the Illini are able to get a guy on that second base, things could be changed. The Illini maybe could have put up a different lead or got to the lead first, but his defensive effort was great, and it was awesome to see him finally get his first hit on the year.
Because that feels like the position where there's been the most turnover the last couple seasons. They had Zoris in 2019, who was really solid. Then you had Jones and Hayes and kind of the platoon role last year, but now going with three new catchers essentially this season, seeing that you have that depth at the third string catcher, that was really huge.
And Scott Beaton was telling us they're trying to get the bullpen catcher to be eligible for the game last game, because I think their backup catcher, they didn't have one, so it was going to be a field player. I couldn't remember exactly.
It was going to be Huggins.
So that would have been interesting. But thank God it didn't happen, because he had a really good game. He put it all out for the Birds.
And then another really good game. I've been impressed with Luke Chang all season, because last year he was obviously right up there with Cermak for their best defender. It's hard to be the best defender on your team where you have the MVC Defender of the Year, but Luke Chang was just as solid at shortstop. But it was his hitting that was holding him back. He was batting below 200, and then he got hurt in early April and was out for the year. So it felt like he didn't really get the freshman year he wanted at the plate. But this year now he's batting over 250. He had two massive hits at really swing points in the game, where he had that huge double in the fourth or fifth inning that kind of broke things open. And then he had another single that knocked in two RBIs late in the game that kind of just put the exclamation point on that game. So now they're getting that production out of Luke Chang. He's a player I'm really excited to see what he develops into, because he's one of the younger players. He's a true sophomore and just has shown so much potential. The fact that he's really revamped his whole hitting approach this season, he could be someone they could build around, knowing that that he can already bring such great defense at shortstop.
Yeah, and the offense just keeps on building up. I mean, Ryan Cermak's still sophomore, I mean, eligibility-wise, technically.
I think he's going to be playing pro ball
summer. He definitely could. His draft stock, we talked about the past couple of weeks, keeps rising. And before we get in that Western Illinois game, the game on against the Illini, he did get two hits, no RBIs. Was a little disappointed, no home runs in that game, as the Birds have been smacking around some home run balls. But it was a cold night on Tuesday night, and a little bit of wind, too.
The wind was blowing, right in from center field, I don't think anybody was putting one out of the park on that one. But Cermak did have the hardest hit ball of the day. He had a foul ball into the concourse, and the exit velocity on that one was 114 miles per hour. It wasn't put in play, but it was still the hardest hit ball of the day, according to the StatCast.
Like, when I saw that, I knew it was foul right away, but that ball just disappeared from my eyes. I mean, I'm sure I've seen a ball hit harder than that, maybe, but that thing went flying, and that just shows the pure power he has and the ability that he's not just a power hitter. He can smack the ball around. He can do and get in different areas, too, around the field.
And that's what you got to love about college baseball, right, is these pro-caliber players swinging with aluminum bats. Like, it's awesome. They just clobber it.
Yeah, and it keeps it fun. I mean, like, I remember a lot of talk was just talking about maybe taking away aluminum bats in college baseball. It's just like, nah, it makes it a lot more fun.
I think maybe give them the option to use the wood bat. Because the players that are trying to go pro, like, that's a good thing to have on tape, good to get those reps, especially seniors. But
still, I feel like they wouldn't even want to do that, though, because, I don't know.
It's harder to hit with a wood bat.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's just one of those interesting. It comes up every year if they should keep the wood bats or keep the aluminum bats or go to wood, but I don't think we're going to see much change. But
will Ryan Cermak ever calm down? Because that game against Western Illinois, oh my God.
That was an all-timer.
Two grand slams, three home runs total, 10 RBIs, and That's probably one of the better Redbird performances that I've seen in my career here.
I mean, yeah, he broke Mike Pryor's record set in 1985. Pryor had 9 home runs. The last player to hit 3 was Paul DeJong, who has put on
a pretty solid career. Yeah. He's a pretty good guy.
So Cermak's just doing stuff that when you look at the company he's with, it's pretty impressive. And that's the part that's the toughest about this is knowing that he will probably be playing in the minor leagues after this season. Yeah. Like, we want him to come back, but, like, he's a star, and he's going to go do great things probably at the next level.
Yeah, and he's done it for 2 years in a row. He's definitely probably getting in the views from other scouts, getting some information where he could possibly go, what round he might fall in. And it's always interesting to look at because the Valley does produce a good amount of MLB players, and it's fun to watch Ryan Cermak smack it around.
I mean, yeah, you look at that. You look at 2 Redbirds on opening day rosters with Paul DeJong and Owen Miller, mm-hmm. and Cermak could be in that company. Because we've obviously seen Illinois State players get drafted, but I think you're looking at the way Cermak's doing it, where he was producing last year as an underclassman and just has continued to pick up this year, it really looks like he's going to have those skills that translate to the next level. Mm-hmm. And talking about another Redbird team that was in some action, Illinois State softball. They had a pretty solid weekend as a friend of the show, Kaylee Chevelle, had a pretty great end to the game that Joey was at on Saturday night.
Oh, it was awesome. So the game Saturday night, I'm shocked that they played it because I called the game with Cammie Kelly and it was freezing cold. And we probably talked about it on the call a little bit too much how cold we were because it was 40 degrees and wind just blowing right in our faces. And it was brutally cold. And the game, thank God the game was playing at a pretty high tempo. Like, both teams were playing really well defensively, but then Kaylee Chevelle with the walk-off home run made the 2 hours I sat in the cold worth it because it was so fun to watch her get that home run. And then, on Sunday, they were able to split the doubleheader as well. Delaney Bryant had 2 home runs in that going, and Kaylee Chevelle hit another one in their win on Sunday. So they have been, playing pretty well. But a couple games after that, earlier this week, were a little tough.
Well, going back to the Chevelle walk-off home run, did you see? Yeah, I mean, maybe you saw in person, but I definitely saw in the replay. Did you see Coach Fisher's reaction? She was the third base coach. How she was just jumping up and down. And for a coach that's been here for 39 years, seeing her get that excited over her walk-off win was pretty cool. And she said it after the game that just for one of her team captains hitting her first career home run in that fashion, she gets that excited for it, which is cool to see that you're just excited for a walk-off win in year 39 as she might have been in year
and
one.
It's wild that she hit that home run because she's not a power hitter. No. And the wind was blowing in. Like, it was the same thing with the baseball game. The wind was blowing in from center field, so she really clobbered that ball.
I heard you on the call for that walk-off, and it kind of seemed like you were a little bit like surprised at first. You're like, it's going.
Because it was one of those. One of those where she hit it super high up, and then it just didn't come down. Uh-huh. And so I'm watching it, and I'm like, it's going. I probably said it 4 times, and then finally it fell behind the wall, and I had no depth perception. Yeah. I was like, oh, and it's gone.
But talking about the offense has been producing. We've seen Delaney Bryant having a really good year. Abby Knight, another freshman, putting up massive numbers. It's been the pitching that's been inconsistent, and that was to be expected with Morgan Day and Mac Leonard transferring out. But now the pitching staff took another hit as Hannah Ross is dealing with an injury. So one of your 2 starters is a little banged up, so they've been relying on Amanda Fox. And it looked like she was just running out of steam yesterday in the 11-3 loss to Illinois. Yeah. And so they have some other options they had coming out of the pen, but just neither of them could really throw strikes, and that was what ultimately led to them getting run-ruled yesterday by the Illini.
And it's a tough break, like you said, losing 2 of the best pitchers in the nation.
Yeah.
They leave for bigger and better things, and that's fine, but you have to be able to kind of rebuild around that, and it's just taking the Redbirds some time right now. And you're absolutely right. Hannah Ross getting hurt is such a big blow to this team that's already had inconsistency of pitching, and so hopefully Ross can kind of take a week or so and rehab the injury that's nagging her, get back out so Amanda Fox doesn't have to pitch every single game.
Because looking at it right now, the stats from the Redbird pitching staff, I mean, Hannah Ross has 81 innings pitched, Amanda Fox 105. The rest of that, you got Allison Thielman with 8.1 and Emma Hicks with 3.2. So that's a certain situation in softball. Like, when you go down with an injury, especially at a mid-major area here at ISU, you don't really have a whole lot of backup that you would have at your number 1 and 2 spot. So it's going to be hard to rebound after that.
No, and that's one, especially now moving into conference play, they're going to have a tough time with that, trying to figure out who it is that's going to be able to replace her. Because you look, they have a doubleheader on Saturday. I believe on Sunday they had Fox pitch both games of the doubleheader. Mm-hmm. Or on Tuesday she pitched both games of the doubleheader against Drake. So that's a tough one, as she's already put a lot of miles on her arm this week and is probably going to have to do that again this upcoming weekend, which will be a quick turnaround. And we'll have all three games of this weekend series on WZND on Saturday. The coverage will start at 11:50 and on Sunday also at 11:50. So catch that between the Redbirds and the Evansville Purple Aces. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're taking things to the ice. We're talking about the Chicago Blackhawks. That's next on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Hey, this is Katie Weimerskirch, and you're listening to The Red Zone.
And we're back on The Red Zone. Leo Stauder, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kenny, and now we're taking things to the ice because, well, I guess we haven't done it in a while, and we needed to kill 15 minutes on the show. So we're talking about the Chicago Blackhawks for whatever reason we want to do that. And because, let's face it, it hasn't been a good year for the Blackhawks. They're, regardless of what happened on or off the ice, that this is not the year they thought they were going to have. I think that's the big thing they put out here, was they thought they were going into this year to contend. And now they sit seventh in the Central Division, 59 points, officially eliminated from playoff contention. And they're at this point where, what is it you do next? And I don't know where the right answer is, where to start, but I think a lot of work's going to be done, need to be done, and I don't envy the Blackhawks for doing this. It's going to get a lot worse before it gets better, and is what I think.
And you're at a place right now where you kind of know what you have, and I think that does work. That works in the Hawks' favor, because you have guys, you have your point-a-game guys. You have Patrick Kane, you have Alex DeBrincat. Patrick Kane just over a point a game, Alex DeBrincat just under a point a game. But those are two guys who are going to be good. You could either trade them away or you can keep them, but you know what you have there, and the rest of this roster is just a whole bunch of question marks. It's just like a bunch of prospects that are not looking great, not working out, and it's just like you're in this standstill right now where you tried to rebuild on the fly, and it didn't work.
Last year at this time, I had the thought that the Hawks would totally be rebuilding. Then in the offseason, over the summer, I was like, oh, you know what? I did say, I was like, maybe they can sneak into the playoffs. I mean, I just thought that at the moment, but obviously it's not happening. But now they're in that situation where, once again, they're probably going to be rebuilding. It seems like finally now they're committed to the rebuild.
They should be, as that's my point with the lack of direction. Because last year, you could feel good about maybe where they were going because they played a lot of kids. You could look at Ian Mitchell, Nicholas Beaudin, Wyatt Kalmuck, and say those are three defensemen that they might not be great, but you gave them opportunities. Mm-hmm. You had Kevin Lankinen, who looked, he might not have been the guy, but you were giving him the opportunity net. He probably needed another season. But then you go and you bring in all these veteran defensemen. You bring in Marc-Andre Fleury to take away the reps from Lankinen, and you've just stashed Mitchell, Beaudin, and Kalmuck in the minors. It's all the momentum you built from last year was gone because you thought you could go for it this year, and that was probably the most destructive path the organization could have taken, because now you don't know what you have with most of your young players, and it's probably not going to be better. You probably stalled their development more than anything.
I think it's kind of funny how they finally realize, like, wow, no. Like, at the beginning of the season, like, yeah, let's go for it. And then all of a sudden, trade deadline, you go Fleury gone, Carpenter gone, Hagel gone, and just like that, they're going to the rebuild. It doesn't make sense, like, looking outside into the front office.
And the worst part about that is you've gotten to this point because you refused to actually rebuild. Now you have guys who could be good pieces to build a new franchise around, guys like Brandon Hagel, but you had to dump him because you're in this weird point where, well, the trade was really
good.
It was a great trade, but you have all these guys who you have to pay, like Seth Jones and Jake McCabe and all these guys who you're paying a lot of money to that are not going to help you in the long term.
And that's my point, is I didn't have a problem with them going for it, trying to contend, but they got the wrong players. Mm-hmm. I mean, Seth Jones, he's been as advertised. He's been the number one defenseman he was brought in to be. I'll say that I was critical of the trade at the time, but he's been fine. I like him. I didn't like what they gave up for him, but the player's been fine. You can hate the trade, but like the player. Jake McCabe would have been an awesome defenseman if it was like 2003, but he's too slow for the modern game, and just it doesn't translate. Where it takes guys like Johnny Gaudreau three strides just to blow past him in the neutral zone, he doesn't offer that much. So they went about it the wrong way, trying to bring in veteran players, and now that came at the expense of the development of their young players. At this point in the season, I don't want to see Calvin DeHaan, Eric Gustafson, Caleb Jones playing. I want to see guys like Alex Vlasic, who they've given a couple looks but not a real chance. I want to see Ian Mitchell back up. Jakob Galvis, another young defenseman that they really haven't given much looks to. I want to see the young players playing, because at least then you can point to that and say there's something to build from.
But if you're looking as a coach, what would you think about just telling these guys that have been playing the whole year, like, you know what, we're not going to be playing you anymore. We're going to... I mean, that's just part of the game, though, right?
But yeah, it's a business. And if you're the coach, like, it's not your fault that the team has done a very poor job of assembling a roster around you. You just have to deal with the personnel that you have.
I mean, you look at it. They haven't been getting the job done. You have 59 points. You have a minus 59 goal differential. You've given them all year to try to turn this thing around, and they haven't. So now bring in some young guys that could maybe do it. And honestly, if I was Derek King, the coach, trying to keep my job for next year, I'd say I want to prove I can do stuff with the young guys, prove that I can coach, be the coach for when this team is maybe contending, and that I can coach the young players and keep them going. Like, I think that could get his job.
And
capped more than playing a bunch of veterans that won't be here next year.
And Leo, you brought up the minus 59 goal differential. There is one Blackhawks player who has a positive goal differential on the season, a positive plus minus. Any guesses at who it is?
I don't care. Plus minus is a made up stat.
Caleb Jones.
Okay. He's back.
The best defenseman on the Blackhawks, Caleb Jones.
No.
But the one thing that I think Blackhawks fans can take out of this season, and I might be biased because I love the guy, but the way that Dylan Strome has been able to pull a 180 on his public perception and his game this season, I think is really important for the Hawks moving forward, whether or not they want to keep him, because he's increasing his value, right?
Yeah.
So either he'll get traded and he'll bring in more than he would have
last
year. Is he a
free agent this year? I don't know if it's like restricted or not.
I'm not quite sure. I'm trying to look that up at the same time.
Because that chemistry they have on that line with DeBrincat, Kane, and Strome, it's probably their best line.
It's their best line. It's their only line. But that's my thing with Strome, is that he can really only produce when he's with those two. And so I don't.
True.
It's one of those things. What do you do with him? Is he probably not a number one center, but he's a nice piece to have. So do you sell him while his value's higher? Do you keep him around? Because who knows when this thing's going
to
turn around?
I think it's important to have those complimentary guys who you can plug in with your best players, and they can elevate their game and elevate your best players as well. I think that's an important thing for all teams in hockey.
But
do you
let another team fall for that and give you
too much
for him?
Exactly.
Do you want him to, like, I don't know, do well next? Do you want to even keep him for next year?
I mean, I love the guy, and I would love to see him do well, but we're at a point now where does he, like Leo's saying, does he really have a place on the Blackhawks?
No. Who is the one guy you look at this roster? Kane is the one guy, maybe? He could probably go.
If you're trying to rebuild, that's like the piece that could probably restart it all. They're not one trade away from being fixed. I think they need to just tear this down with studs, trade anything that isn't nailed down. I mean, I'd say, as much as I'd hate to trade Kane or DeBrincat, because I love watching both of them play, but like, if they can get you the assets you need.
Like, if Hagel can get you two first-rounders and two pretty solid prospects, imagine
To answer your question, I'm looking through the roster right now. I don't see anyone who is, like, for sure
Seth Jones
needs to stay.
He's going to stay forever.
Because his contract is unmovable.
But low-key, like, that could be good, like, having a lot of money on a rebuilding team just so you're filling up cap space. And he's a good defenseman. He's kind of like the defenseman you want in the NHL now.
And my whole thing is, though, he's probably he's not going to be a number one by the time anything matters for this team. Like, he's going to hit a steep decline probably when he goes over 30. But as of right now, he's what you want. And I just wish they had more defensemen like him, players that can move the puck, contribute offensively. It's just the way this whole team was constructed. They're too slow. They are just bad. And Jones, DeBrincat, Kane are the guys you could look at and say they're actually good. That's what the rest of this roster should look like. And it's just so far away from being even close to competing for an 8th spot in the playoffs, that I don't even know what you have to do.
But I'm just happy they're now actually finally going to that spot of rebuilding. And
we'll
going,
see.
I mean, it would be crazy if they decided to try to pull it together.
I don't think they're going to try to pull it together,
but
I don't think they're going full rebuild.
That's what we said last year. We said after the season last year that, man, this team needs to rebuild. Like, this team needs to, like, find new pieces and start building it up again, because clearly the glory days of the early 2010s are over.
Drunk the juice.
And we did. We drank the Kool-Aid.
You're the hater of everything.
But I was right.
But the whole thing is, we drank the Kool-Aid. We got on board with this team. We're like, oh man, we have Seth Jones and Marc-Andre Fleury. We're going to be a 100-point team this year. And then we stink. And it's just, it's confounding.
It's almost like talking about the Cubs, how teams are afraid to rebuild because you're afraid if the play on the field or on the ice or the court gets bad, are the fans going to go away and not come back? And I think with the Blackhawks, you're already probably the fourth most popular professional sports team in town. You had scandal off the ice. You kind of have a fair weather fan base per se. So I feel like they're afraid to go full rebuild to trade Kane or to bring it. They want players that can still draw. And I think that's going to maybe keep them from tearing this all
down.
But I
also think like maybe, I mean, it would take a very long time, but like they're also getting rid of these guys because they want to bring back that atmosphere again, and they're just tearing it down right away. I mean, it could take a long time. Like you saw the early 2000s Hawks, and that all went down and everything.
These teams are probably just as bad.
No, that's what I'm saying.
You're thinking they'd
like,
be good.
They get worse. I mean, just rebuild, because I feel like that's the only way that the fans are going to come back is if they just tear everything down and become good in like 5 to 6 years.
But that's not how owners think.
I know.
Tom LaMonica's sports communication class. Rebuild is the scariest word for ownership, and it'll be interesting to see to what degree the new management with the Blackhawks embraces that.
In like the coaching spot coming up this offseason, like, do you keep Derek King?
No.
Do you bring in a? But what?
But
you're not going to get a big coach.
Nobody's going to want this job.
No one's going to want to go to this job at all.
You're in no man's land at this point with the Blackhawks. You don't have the young pieces where this is an attractive job. You don't have the vets where they'd want to come. It's not an easy fix either. Like, you're just going to get somebody middle of the pack, and it's just going to be messy. It's going to be bad. That's my thing with. I don't know when this ship is going to turn around. They need a lot of work. In the NHL, you need a number one center, a number one defenseman, and a franchise goalie. They have the defenseman. I don't think the other two are anywhere close to this roster or in the organization. And until you have one, you're kind of just stuck.
And I think that we're getting to a point now where we talk about how the Hawks need to rebuild and they need to start shipping these pieces out. But we've been Hawks fans our entire lives. We know that that's not necessarily how it happens with this organization. I think it's really just going to take these guys, like the cornerstones of this team, namely Toews and Kane, just to age out. I truly think that the organization, like you said, is too scared to move these guys for fear of the fan base abandoning them when these are the last faces you have left of the glory days. It's like, how do you move these guys and retain fans through 3 years of awful hockey?
You probably don't. I think they're probably, because both Kane and Toews will have one more year after this year. They're probably going to keep him. Like, people Toews probably wants out, but
he's dropping. Kane still has the level of play.
Yeah, but I'm saying I think they're probably going to keep both of them because it's scary to trade a franchise cornerstone.
And by then, the contract, though, will be up, and I'm sure, especially Toews, will not be making $10 million a year.
So, I don't know. There's no easy answer for what the Blackhawks are doing or where they're going. It's bad. It's going to get worse. but
it's a good thing. In the long run,
they should have done this, or they.
We should have been talking about this. We should have been talking about this in 2017, talking about how they need to start rebuilding this team. Because after 2015, there was the 1 year where they went to the playoffs, didn't have success, and then that's when it really started to fall off.
Yeah.
And now we've been here for 5 years, and they've just continued to drag this process out of being a mediocre team, and now finally the team is bad, and you kind of have to reap what you sow.
I want them to just lose every game because isn't our first round pick top two protected?
Top two protected. So
there
we go.
Hey.
Leo.
You never know what could happen. Yeah. Lottery draft wasn't in favor of us a couple of years ago, but we didn't pick the right guy. We got new guys up there.
But yeah, so watching Blackhawks hockey really isn't that fun right now. When we come back, we'll talk about something that might be more fun. We'll see. Chicago Bulls basketball. That's next with David Moses on 103.3 WZND.
I'm Dan Muller, basketball coach of your Illinois State Redbirds, and you're listening to The Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND.
I just still love hearing that bump. Dan Muller, great guy. Hope he ends up doing, I think he's going to do well, whatever he does after coaching, but I love hearing his bump on the show. But we're back, Red Zone, Leo Stoddard, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kenny, and now David Moses comes on the show. And before we get underway with Moses, I think we have a pretty special announcement for this. We held open tryouts for our positions next year. We put a bunch of inflatables and wiffle ball bats and stuff in the middle of the quad and made the respective candidates fight their way for who the next Red Zone host would be.
It was like a Yard Games, Hunger Games
basically
situation.
And David emerged victoriously. The new Red Zone crew next year will be Mikey Fernelli, Dane Dreyfus, and the man you're about to hear now, David Moses. So David, welcome to the show here.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much for having me. I really appreciate you all giving me this position, and I cannot wait to get started.
Hey, let's clap it up for the guy. Big clap for the guy.
That's good radio there. Oh, we could have like we should have like a
little clapping soundboard. Yeah.
That's what we need here. That's
just wacky sound effects.
Yeah, this is basically a pre-show meeting on air, but yeah, we need just wacky radio sound effects.
David, so
David, there's your first
down,
idea for next year.
Writing some notes down for sure.
You got to bring some fun ideas to the table next year for sure.
But let's talk about what you actually came here to talk about here, the Chicago Bulls, because their past two-game stretch against the Bucks and the Celtics, I feel like, has been indicative of a bigger theme this season, where anytime they have to face a team of playoff caliber, it doesn't go well. And especially against the Bucks, it just seems like they've been on the same wavelength. What's been going wrong for the Bulls whenever they face these top teams, and where does the fix come, I guess, is what I'll start with.
You know, I think for a lot of Bulls fans, it's been a fun year overall. It's been a fun year. The beginning of the year, I thought this team was going so far in the year.
Yeah.
Then injuries happened, and everybody started to say that was everybody's, you know, excuse. We were injured. Wait till we get the full roster back.
Yeah.
We still don't have the full roster back right now, but I don't think you can blame it on injuries anymore. I think that, in my opinion, you've had majority of the season to adjust game plan and try to rework things. If you're, Billy Donovan and that coaching staff to really try to adjust to the injuries that you've been having. Yeah. You even brought in Tristan Thompson, who, in my opinion, was an excellent pickup. Just for defensive leadership and just leadership in general.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point in time, you have no excuses. You cannot say that you have injuries or we're tired. No, it's time to pick it up. You made the playoffs, and you know you really got to pick it up in this time, in this point of the year.
And especially with Alonzo Ball going down, I mean, that's a guy who brought the energy and defense on the squad. But he also brought the playmaking. But yeah, like David, you're talking about it, him going down. They've had time to adjust, and now Alonzo's, it's looking like he probably isn't coming back for the playoffs. Probably for sure not the first round. He's had a setback, according to Adrian Wojnarowski. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays in factor, because it starts on the perimeter side on the defense. When you're in basketball, kind of, you start on the perimeter and then you go into the post. But then they're post defense, Vucevic out there at times as a reliability, and it's scary to watch, because the past month or so, the Bulls are fading right now.
It's so crazy. I was just debating with somebody online. They called
get
Nikola
into it. Little Reddit post.
Little bit. They called Nikola Vucevic the number one option on the Bulls team.
Oof.
And wow. I was like, what?
He's like offensively.
Yeah. I looked at a stat and it looked like Turdates. 2 for 17.
Yeah.
3 for 16. That was his shooting percentages and stats. I was like, are you guys kidding me?
Yeah. He's had some games though, like where he was the number one, but he is not. He's the number three. He's clearly the number three on this team.
And like you were saying with Lonzo, Lonzo was having such a great year before he got injured, not only on the defensive side, on the passing side, and just being a guard, but he was shooting the lights out for a little bit of time.
His new form.
He was doing really good with that new form. And I think this was one of his best seasons in the league so far, but he definitely was a big hole that the Bulls just can't seem to fill right now.
Yeah, and so we're talking about their defense right now. So right now they would be facing up against the Bucks, Sixers, or Celtics. If you had to pick between those three, who do you want to go up against? Because those are all three teams that are, especially the Celtics, they've been one of the hottest teams in NBA this year. And the Bucks and Sixers have two of the best big men in the league, and we don't have any that can guard them.
You know, those are all teams within the last 20 days that they have just destroyed the Bulls.
Yeah.
And I know that because I watched
national TV.
Yeah, it's been embarrassing.
No, yeah.
I do not know. I probably would have to say I'd probably go with the Celtics.
Same.
I do not want to see Joel Embiid right now, and I definitely don't want to see Giannis until...
Just because the inside presence would be way too much.
They're too unstoppable.
For the Bulls.
And when Joel is having a bad night, just toss it to Harden. Yeah. When Giannis is having a bad night, just toss it to Middleton or a plethora of other
shooters. But those guys don't even have bad nights either, you know? Like,
yeah, they're automatic for sure.
Two, like, top three MVP favorites right now are those two guys.
For sure.
Yeah.
And talking about other options on the Bulls, I think you can't talk about the 2021-22 season with the Bulls without talking about DeMar DeRozan. What he's been doing has just been nothing short of spectacular. Putting up 50 points the other night against the Clippers, when he was compared to be supposed to be the worst pickup of the offseason. I think he's proved a lot of people wrong.
Mm-hmm.
David, I want to hear your pitch for DeMar DeRozan MVP, because is that conversation still alive? And I think he's been doing something nobody's been expecting him to do this year. I mean, he's been everything as advertised and then some, I'd say.
Yeah, it's hard to say right now. In February,
we want your hottest take right now.
In February, I was really convinced because he went through a stretch where he scored 30 in probably like 10 games straight.
Yeah, he almost broke Jordan's record.
And it was absolutely, 35. I couldn't believe it. But since then, he has slowed down.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. I think there's just too much heat going with DeMar DeRozan, Joel Embiid, Nikola Vucevic, Nikola Jokic. Those
Boots
guys.
For MVP would be interesting. That's a hot take.
Let's start the campaign going right now.
Going with that, I mean, when DeMar was going off, the Bulls were winning. He still is right now, but the Bulls are losing, and that's a really big factor when it comes down to the MVP race. And that's arguably why Jokic is in number one right now, because the Nuggets' injury problems have been just like the Bulls, yep, or even worse. And he's still putting up these numbers, trying to go for that back-to-back MVP. And he's deserved it, but like, he's not the guy unless you really like a passing big man. I don't know. I have more fun watching Joel Embiid and Giannis compete.
For sure.
But just what Jokic does with the team throughout the regular season, haven't really seen the postseason success, though.
You said it right there. It makes it all the more impressive when you don't have key star players next to you. Jamal Murray, yeah, Michael Porter Jr. Those guys are not in right now. And the fact that Jokic is being able to sustain these numbers and top them is all the more reason why he should be 1A of MVP conversations for sure.
Yeah, and like looking at the NBA playoff race right now, East or Western Conference, what do you think has been more deep this year, and why would you say so?
Oh, man. This year has been so weird. I was going to say this earlier because
it's been fluctuating, I believe.
Yeah.
I mean, like now, especially with Steph going out with Warriors and stuff, like they've definitely dropping off a little bit.
I remember coming on the show last semester, and I think we were doing like a season preview.
Yeah.
And we were talking about who we think is going to go all the way. And I think I said the Lakers and the Brooklyn Nets. Now, one of those teams is fighting at the bottom of their conference, and one of them is about to get ready for an early offseason.
They already are. Yeah, they're gone. They're eliminating the Lakers. But the Nets one, I mean, that they've had a bunch of problems. Now they're kind of catching a little bit, and that's going to be scary to face off against.
Like, when I say, and here's a hot take. I've watched a couple of their games. I think Kyrie Irving is right now, at least, more vital to the team than anyone. I know Kevin Durant, he'll give you an easy 25, 30, but Kyrie Irving, when he came back, the way that he shot the lights out of the ball. Not only that, him being able to get to the basket, score, pass out to a three-point shooter. It's just been, he's been poetic with what he's been doing on the team.
And I feel like Kyrie wasn't in the playoffs last year, and we saw with Harden as that second option, wasn't really doing much against the Bucks.
Right.
And like now, if they can stay healthy with Kyrie, you always need that second guy. I mean, KD, he's a terrific guy. I don't want to say this, but I'm saying it. He's a terrific player, one of the best shooters, best scorers of all time, easily. But you do need a number two. I mean, he lost against the Bucks, and because Harden just wasn't being that number two. KD went to the Warriors. He had Stephen Clay. Even in Oklahoma City, he had Russell Westbrook. And you still need that number two guy that's going to be able to lift you up there.
Ben Simmons.
Has he even played a game yet?
Not yet.
I don't know how they're expecting with that situation. I mean, it was good for them to get rid of Harden. It was a good situation because Harden won it out, getting Simmons in there. But Seth Curry also, I feel like, was a great addition
squad.
Yeah, even Andre Drummond putting some little presence in the paint. I mean, he's nothing great, though. He can collect the rebounds. And that's another thing the Nets were struggling with.
But, you know, going back to your initial question, because I never answered it, really.
Yeah.
I probably would have to say the East. They are really deep this year. The Celtics. The Bucks.
Heat are number one. The Heat are up two games right now. They've almost clinched it, I believe.
They're not being talked about enough.
Yeah.
And when you have the Nets as your eighth seed, that's how you know that you've got a pretty good...
They've got to do a play-in game. Like, imagine the Nets just lose a play-in game. But, yeah, you're talking about it, David. Like, the Cavs, too, also kind of dropped off a little bit like the Bulls, but they're still in that play-in game area. And then the Western Conference, you wanted to talk a little about the Memphis Grizzlies, because this year, they've kind of taken the league by storm, and they've been consistent the whole season, right?
Yeah, 20-2 without Ja Morant.
Yeah.
Let's just let that sink in for a second. 20-2 without their star player.
That's insane.
55-24, first in the Southwest Division, and they're shooting just under 50% as a team. This team has put themselves in prime position heading into the playoffs. I think they've got a great group of guys. They're very young, fast, explosive. It's gonna be exciting to watch. I actually, I want to go around the table after this and say who we're going to see in the finals. I have two teams, but I'm waiting for that.
And I really like this Grizzlies team because it feels like this is what the Grizzlies are like every time they get good. Like when they had Zach Randolph, you know, right. And it's kind of just like this group of underdog guys who kind of like put it together and then all of a sudden they come out of nowhere. So it's always fun. It feels like once every 10 years or so, the Grizzlies come back onto the map. But I think now it's way more sustainable. Oh, like the way that they've built this roster, I think they're going to be good for a lot of years to come too.
Because you really said it. You know, it's not Zach Randolph, who was probably on the wrong side of 30. It's Ja Morant, who I don't even think has hit 25 yet. Desmond Bain, who really started to become a really good player this year. Jaren Jackson, who may not be as the most consistent player, but defensively he is a tank. And not to mention they have Steven Adams. I don't care what age that guy is, you want him on your squad. The Grizzlies are really in a good position.
Any night Steven Adams can just go out there and put up 20 and 20, just right? Collect all those boards. And he's just I remember seeing a couple of weeks ago, he was just picked. I think it was someone on the Bulls. He picked them up to just get them out of the way.
Yep.
But just talking about the Grizzlies, how they surrounded Ja Morant with shooters and then eventually with the big men, like you were saying, it's impressive. Jaren Jackson Jr., I mean, he's putting up 16-4 a game for the Grizzlies, and it's a fun team to watch, but I don't know if they can get over the hump in the Western Conference.
Yeah, that's the question. When you're talking about experience-wise, I do believe that will be one of the biggest challenges they face going into the playoffs. You've got teams like Utah, who's been there a couple years. You can never count out the Warriors. I believe they're trying to get Steph Curry back before the playoffs start. It's going to be interesting to see how they handle on the experience side, being in that playoff atmosphere when they're on the road down 3-2. Are they going to have enough to, get over the hump and tie the series up and go to a game seven? It's something that's going to be interesting to watch.
And I feel like this year for the Grizzlies could be a year where they're trying to prove that they are one of the best teams and maybe they won't get over that hump, but next year they're going to have the salary cap money and maybe they can draw in a free agent or maybe trade a couple of these younger pieces for a star player. That's something that definitely could be happening for the Grizzlies, I think.
So what do you think they would need?
I mean, I just feel like the players they have right now, besides if you take out Jaren Jackson, Ja Morant, and Desmond Bain, maybe a little. See, those are the three I would say right there that you're probably keeping. Dylan Brooks could also be in that mark too, but just trading for, you need another like all-star player. Besides Ja Morant, maybe Jaren Jackson could turn into an all-star type player, but you need another all-star player. That's how the NBA just is. You need at least two guys that can go out there, especially get you a bucket any time and take off a little bit of pressure on Ja Morant. I don't know exactly who the Grizzlies would go out and need or what they exactly need, but they still need that one more like star.
And we'll have to wait to see who that next star is for the Grizzlies. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with the Bulls, too. David asked for my prediction for who's going to win the championship. I think it's going to be the Bulls. I'm going with the homer pick. You guys sound too much of a hater.
Bucks
so
in six.
Bulls in five. There we have it. Nobody asked, but there you have it. And we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to hit the diamond. It's MLB opening day, and we're going to have some opinions about that. So that's next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Illinois State infielder Owen Miller, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
We've been talking all day. It's opening day, one of the best times of the year for baseball fans, where every team, even if they don't believe it, thinks their team might have a chance to go all the way. Yeah. It's the start of a new era for several teams. I know we have the 2-1 Sox fan split between me and Joey versus Joe. But I don't know where Moses is on the baseball argument.
I talked to him about it.
Yeah.
This is make or break for him.
We were talking before, and I'm unfortunately a White Sox fan.
Oh, yeah. Sweet.
Well, he said unfortunately.
Unfortunate. I think as Sox fans, we have a lot to be excited about, but maybe start things off here. Joe, with the Cubs beating the Brewers 5-4 on day one. Are you buying in? Is this the team of destiny? Are they going to go wire to wire? Let's hear it.
No, I'm buying in right at 500. And then maybe they'll get like five more games to just go a little bit above that. But that would be a successful year right now because the Cubs front office,
They're going into this year telling us that this isn't like a rebuilding type team, which it really isn't. They still do have like those pieces. I mean, not a full rebuild, though. Like, you're going to be just tanking down, like Pirates tanking, like that level of tank. But what they did last year, we talked about it last semester, just got rid of their guys, just do it, it's over with, and everything. And this year, they arguably made the most amount of – the best – not the best, the most moves in the NL Central to add to their roster.
Well, because, Leo, how could you not be terrified of the right side of the infield with Nick Madrigal and Frank Schwindel?
He turned a couple of good plays in there. Frank Schwindel.
Schwindel.
He's a guy who batted 300 last year. I mean, it wasn't like he was doing it the whole year too. When he got called up too, it wasn't like a fluke little run he made.
I mean, my thing talking about the Cubs' direction though is nothing gets out on a pro sports team's press without them wanting it out there. Nothing gets into the bloodstream without them putting it out there.
Yeah.
And the Cubs, it's like they float all these rumors out. We're in on Freddie Freeman. We're in on Carlos Correa. Anthony Rizzo might come back. It's like they keep sending these messages so that the fan base thinks they can just turn around with a couple signings. That's what confuses, because even then, I'm still seeing reports on Twitter that like the Cubs might be interested in trading for Correa if things go south with the Twins. Like, it doesn't feel like you said, like they're going to go for a full rebuild. I think they think they're two or three moves for away from turning this thing around.
Yeah, and I also think those were true. They were interested, but they weren't going to pull the trigger because I feel like they were just a little bit too scared and everything. The one I really – the Correa one, I was just like optimistic. I was like, yeah, I mean, maybe we'll take him, because he really wanted the 1 to 2 year deal.
Yeah.
And I would be like, yeah, I'll take that 1 year. You're not putting a lot of money down for a full like 10 year contract you're seeing these guys get. And so it's been interesting. And the offseason moves that they made were, I feel like, pretty good for the team they needed, especially at the pitching spot. They got Marcus Stroman in, Wade Miley in, and Stroman. It's been a rumor for like 4 years that they were getting him. We were talking about last semester. I was saying, yeah, the Cubs, they're going to get Marcus Stroman, and they finally did.
And yeah, so now they have like 2.5 starting pitchers, maybe. So that's
three. I would say there's no ace, though. I mean, Kyle Hendricks, he could still be put up in that ace category. He's
an underrated guy. I think he's one of my favorite pitchers in baseball,
he's awesome.
Even as a Sox fan.
The stuff he does, the way he just looks like a professor. That's why he's called the professor. But, I mean, the Wade Miley injury, he's going to be out for, I believe, at least 10 days. He's on the 10-day IL, probably going to stretch out a little bit more. But Marcus Stroman, he's going to actually be the third pitcher coming in. We got Brandon Steele pitching tomorrow, the lefty.
All right.
So I was like, well, okay, that's a shock.
What a Brandon Steele is, but maybe it'll be cool.
But another thing about last year, just talking about the Cubs, was their farm system. They had 4 years in a row. They were in the 20s. This year they came in at number 14. They got two top 100 guys, actually three. They put in Saya Suzuki as a prospect this year.
That's the name I was waiting for.
Yeah, and that's the guy who they came in today, or made his debut today, got a hit. Did very well in Japan, but he has to adjust to the MLB. I wasn't not expecting him to really do well at the beginning. He'll still be able to get some home runs, but already he had a good plate appearance. His first at bat, he got a walk, then he got a hit, then he scored in a run. So a solid debut out of him, and it was fun to see. And Nico Horner getting a dinger, his first home run in 2 years. So, I mean, I'm always an optimistic guy, but I kind of am about this team this year, just because they're not going to be trash. They're not going to be good. They're just going to be mediocre.
I think you have third place in the NL Central locked.
Yeah. I think Eric and Schweizer and I were talking, like, the Cubs could go over the Cardinals. I mean, Cardinals didn't do anything in the offseason. Like, Brewers didn't really do anything either. So it's kind of a good thing for the Brewers. They didn't do anything, and it's definitely their division to lose, though.
Oh, absolutely.
You really said it. You're optimistic. I'm cautiously optimistic. I will say this. I believe Seiya Suzuki is going to be very good.
Yeah.
I'm calling it right here. He has my vote for Rookie of the Year.
He's funny. He's so funny, too. He's like, Mike Trout. He literally mimics the swing, too, on Mike Trout, his number and everything, so that's awesome.
The question I have is, can their pitchers perform at a prominent level?
Or what do they do after their starting pitcher?
Well, that's exactly what I just, like, there's nothing. You don't really know at all within the Cubs bullpen. They got rid of all their bullpen pitchers last year. I mean, they did get some good trades for their bullpen pieces last offseason. But right now, if you look in there, you don't even really have a closer. It could be David Robertson, Rowan Wick, Scott Efrost. I mean, it's just really confusing right now, going into that bullpen mark, and they're definitely going to lose in that.
We're just going to have to see how it pans out. You know, like you just say, they don't have the deepest bullpen.
Yeah.
But I am optimistic that, you know, if they stay healthy, stick with it, use their young guys, they'll surprise a couple of people this year.
I think so, too. They definitely are in a situation to maybe put up little eyebrows, like, ooh, look at what they're, because they always go on a weird
they'll
run,
they'll be
too.
Flirty until, like,
no, yeah,
June,
that's exactly,
July, and then
no,
they're going to
be like, yeah, we're going to get rid of everyone.
And then, like, yeah, Schwindel's going to be striking out at, like, a 40% clip, and they're just going to DFA a bunch of guys. Yeah. But I feel like that's how it went last year too, where they were frisky at the start of the year, then basically after the no-hitter, the wheels fell off and led to whatever it is that happened. And switching things across town, the White Sox go in with a lot of hype. I think we wanted maybe to see more activity this offseason, but they did make a move right before opening day. This is a White Sox team that's coming in with a lot of hype, and say what you want about the offseason moves they made or the lack of moves thereof, but I think this is still, you're looking at a team that didn't have their full roster pretty much all of last year and still won 93 games. I'm excited. I'm buying in right now. I'm excited to see what can happen, even if I don't like maybe the direction things went in the offseason.
Oh, I'm absolutely bought in, because even if they didn't make the big splashes that we wanted them to make,
they weren't in a position where they needed one more big free agent or anything.
Exactly, because this team is still so good, and I'm so excited to watch. Like, I'm energized about White Sox baseball, and it feels so good, because like for the 10 years previous to last year, there was nothing to look forward to, but now I'm so excited. I love the rotation and some of the great guys. The only thing is this team has to stay healthy, because that's what killed them last year,
and they still won 93 games even though they weren't healthy.
Right.
Exactly, but then when you got to the postseason, you could really see how that the injuries wore on you when you had to play teams that were of another caliber. So I think if this team can stay healthy and keep guys on the field for the majority of the season, I don't see any reason why they can't go on to the World Series.
I look at it last year, or in the playoffs, where the power just went cold. They weren't putting the ball out of the park, and they couldn't manufacture runs in other ways. That's something they're going to have to work on. But you have guys like Anderson, that Anderson can hit for contact still. You could get himself on base, manufacture those runs. So it's just all of a matter. And even they have other players that are good contact hitters, and that's the mix you need, because when the power goes cold like it did last year, they're out of help. And I think it'll be... I'm most optimistic about seeing what Luis Robert can do with a full season. He's a player that we still don't know really what his ceiling is, as we haven't seen a full 162-game season from him in the major leagues. I think he could be like one of those breakout candidates where they could go as far as he carries them this year.
And I think one addition that you completely fleece the Dodgers from is A.J. Pollock, because Craig Kimbrell was always going to be gone. I remember the first show we had after the Sox lost, you're like, yeah, we're getting rid of Kimbrell. And you got A.J. Pollock, especially going in the outfield spot. That was a big spot for White Sox needed, like, especially last year with their injuries.
The Sox were literally plucking guys off of 73rd Street and putting them in the outfield last year. It was ridiculous.
Not bad, Joey Dwyer.
Literally. I was standing out there next to Adam Engel. Like, it was ridiculous.
But that was what... I don't want to say I didn't like how they didn't go into last season with a backup plan in right field, but the way they were refined, guys like Billy Hamilton, Brian Goodwin, their pro scouting was able to identify replacement level talent that may be overperformed. That does get me a little excited about what the White Sox scouting staff can do, is because they can identify good pro players to plug in with the mix. And so I think Pollock could be another really good example for that. And it'll be interesting to see what they do with the pitching staff as well, because we already see Garrett Crochet is done for the year, needs Tommy John. Lance Lynn is going to be out for a few weeks with an early injury. So how are they going to fill some big voids in the pitching staff that came up right before opening day?
And I think this is the prove it year for Michael Kopech.
Yeah, I was looking right at that name.
Because he's had such a tumultuous start to his career that White Sox fans have been so excited for him for such a long time. Now we have to see him in action. We have to see him stay healthy and produce and be what he was advertised to us. Otherwise, I think it's just like a waste of 4 years trying to develop this guy.
He was electric when he came in that blackout game, the game they won in the playoffs against Houston. That was, I think, you looked at maybe his coming out party on the national stage. I think he probably ends this year in the rotation. Might not start the year in the rotation, but he's a guy I think you could have him pencil in where long-term playoffs you have Lucas Giolito's your number one starter. Then it's Kopech or Cease for game two. Like, I think Kopech, if everything goes to plan, he could be that guy where he is just that lights-out starter. Or even if I like him in that three-inning relief role, too, where he can just get outs in the middle of the game, set the table for Liam Hendricks. There's a lot of possibilities to go with Michael Kopech, and that's one of the things that scares me the most of it is, could La Russa possibly put him on the wrong path and not maximize his potential?
And this is the worst part of baseball season, is it's opening day, and I just want it to be October. You're talking about the playoffs. I remember when we were watching the playoffs last year, I skipped class to come down here, and we were all sitting in the studio across the hall watching the White Sox.
Whose class did you skip for that one?
That would be the media business advisor, our very close personal friend of the show, Deb Lesser. So, Deb, if you're listening, I am very sorry for skipping that class. But I still got an A. in the class. So.
That rewards you for poor behavior, but
that's the story of my life.
The guy that coming out from the outside as a Cubs fan that I was kind of intrigued by was Cespedes' brother.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know much about him. Yeah. He didn't make the opening night roster. He could be something. I think they're originally before the Pollock trade, they were going to try to plug him in right field. We'll see what that is. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to overreact to some grainy video of a AAA player.
Stuff on Twitter and stuff.
Yeah.
Before, it was probably mostly before the Pollock trade.
Yeah.
Just like kind of seeing how he's going to go.
He's a prospect, and we'll see what he becomes. He's not one of their top prospects, but a guy who could be in the mix.
Yeah.
I think that's the part I'm trying not to get into right now at baseball season because everybody overreacts in April.
Oh, I know.
And it's just
the worst.
I can't get that invested yet.
It's the worst.
I'm not – whatever happens tomorrow – like this is probably how it's going to go for the White Sox. They're going to have an up-and-down first – 3-4 weeks. People are going to lose their minds. They're going to have a series in June where maybe they get blown out in a game and people are going to freak out. Yeah, right.
Gonna, like, that's going to start coming again.
By the time like June, July rolls around, this team's going to hit their stride. They're going to be fine. The division is bad. They can sleepwalk through this season
really
and still probably finish top two in the division. I'm not too worried. I just can't overreact right now, but I'm just so excited because this team has that fun mix. They have youth. They have veterans like Jose Abreu. They have so much swagger. It can be a really fun summer at 35th and Shields, and I just can't wait for that ride.
Yeah, it'll be a fun one for you guys, for you White Sox fans. You're gonna enjoy a fun year. I feel
I'm excited for it. And hey, for you Cubs fans sitting over there on the other side of the table working the soundboard,
yeah, you know,
I hope for nothing but the best for you.
Good start.
Yeah. Hey man, that's nice to hear from you, Joey Dwyer. I don't get a lot of that often.
Of course.
Especially coming from you two, and now David Moses throwing in the action.
I just want you to have a good season, except for the four games where you're playing the Sox.
That's always exciting too.
And that's, you hear the music, that's all the time we have on this week's Red Zone. It was a great show. We really hit a lot of different areas. We talked some Redbird baseball, softball. Reminder, you can catch all three games of the softball series on WZNE this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, so tune in for those. We hit the ice for the NHL, talking about the Chicago Blackhawks. We talked about the NBA and the Chicago Bulls with David Moses. Then we wrap things up on opening day. And a reminder, this weekend is WZND's reunion. We'd like to give a big congratulations to somebody very close to Joey on something pretty remarkable.
And big congratulations to the Pops, Greg Dwyer, for clinching the Hall of Fame spot here. He's a former ZNDer, big radio guy, so it'll be fun to see him this weekend.
And who knows, maybe Joey could be the next Dwyer etching his name in the Hall of Fame. He's certainly on track. But that's all we have for this week. Thank you for listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And, of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.